Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Israel has evacuated around 800 members of the so-called Syrian civil organization, White Helmets. Now, the group has been caught many times faking footage and being in cahoots with al-Nusra terrorists. And just why would the U.S. and U.K. insist that the Israelis evacuate this group? Will stay with us as we take a look at the story behind the story of the so-called White Helmets on this debate. Well, I'd like to cross over to Damascus, starting this off with Press TV's correspondent, Mohammed Ali. Mohammed Ali, please fill us in on the latest situation and let's talk a little bit about the evacuation of the White Helmets and what's being said in your part of the world.
Yes, yesterday at about 11 p.m. local time here in Damascus, hundreds of the so-called White Helmet members were actually evacuated, and they escaped with their families towards Jordan with the help of Israeli soldiers, according to many officials in this region, of course, in the Middle East region. Also, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu confirmed that the Israeli side helped them escape in a brief video statement at the request of U.S. President Donald Trump and other world leaders. This is according to Benjamin Netanyahu himself. This happened yesterday during the night, and they were provided with food and a safe passage via the Israeli side towards Jordan. Now, what is interesting is that it is known that the so-called White Helmet members are not, in fact, rescue workers. We have been seeing throughout the unrest here in Syria, the years of war, how those same so-called White Helmet members were actually sometimes fighting alongside the al-Nusra front and sometimes wearing those white helmets and trying to show the world that they are rescuing civilians. Also, on many occasions when there were always accusations against the Syrian government that there were chemical attacks by government troops on the ground, we always saw that those so-called White Helmet members were also part of staging fake so-called chemical attacks, whether we're speaking about Idlib countryside, Aleppo countryside, or even here in eastern Al-Ghouta, in a hospital where there was also a fake alleged chemical attack and it was not proven. So at the end of the day, this is according to experts and even civilians on the ground here in Syria, a direct support for terrorists trying to fake themselves and portray themselves to the world that they are rescue workers. But eventually they are at the same time in the real side. They are only Nusra Front terrorists and those who actually stage fake chemical attacks in favor of the terrorists themselves and the Western agendas.
Thank you so much for that update regarding the White Helmets. That's Press TV's Mohammed Ali in Damascus. I'd like to welcome my guest to the program now, political commentator, Mr. Adam Gary out of London, and Professor George Washington University, Mr. Nabil Michal out of Washington, D.C. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in D.C. And Nabil Michal, who are the White Helmets in your perspective?
I cannot hear.
You can't hear me? Well, let's cross over. Hopefully we'll get that taken care of. Let's cross over to London. I'll ask Adam Gary that same question. Who are the White Helmets in your perspective, sir?
Well, they're essentially a proxy mercenary army and propaganda force that is funded by Western governments, Western so-called NGOs, which really are government organizations on the whole, rather than non-governmental organizations, as the acronym would imply. They've been very instrumental in helping to stage videotaped provocations alleging chemical weapons use when there was, in fact, none by the government, whatever one's opinion of it is. One has to be objective, and that's one thing the White Helmets are certainly not. They were created for a purpose, which was to agitate against the legitimate government, to create propaganda, and to generally meddle in the affairs of the Syrian Arab Republic and give assistance to various terrorist organizations, including the al-Qaeda affiliate al-Nusra, in provoking more and more trouble. Many journalists who have actually been to Syria have actually actually told the world that the majority of the Syrians they talked to have never even heard of the group. It was a group that operated as a kind of insular body designed more for Western consumption and for aiding terrorist groups on the ground than for anything else.
Well, hopefully we've gotten the audio corrected out of Washington. Crossing back over, Nabil Michal. An Israeli foreign ministry spokesman said, quote, Israel has completed a humanitarian effort to rescue the white helmets. Why is this group so important to the West and Israel?
This is a good question, and frankly, I do not know much about it. But I can make some speculative statements, and perhaps we can consolidate our finding about their significance and their recent move and what it implies. Could it have been a result of a quick conversation, a pep talk between Putin and Trump last week when they met in Helsinki? Just they discussed very briefly this group has to exit Syria, and then Putin okayed it. That could be possible. Could it signal out more actions similar to it or in its nature, meaning that there could be more militias, more forces, more contingents, more armed companies that would leave Syria, whether going to Jordan? And actually, I was struck by the reference to Jordan in the whole story, that they would be transported later to Britain, Canada, and some other country, perhaps the U.S., and as you can tell, that they are very lucky because that has not been the fate of millions of Syrian refugees, that whereby they are still stranded in refugee camps for years. So it could have been a quick agreement between Moscow and Washington. They could have been deployed as front-line people to serve some American interests, perhaps also some French interests. So they are on the front line of some NATO-led coalition. I will say that they are tied more to America's strategy. But the important question is, and still I'm at a speculative stage of my thinking, could this lead to further exits of so many groups that are quote-unquote armed militias slash civil workers or humanitarian workers? It could be. So perhaps that could be a gradual beginning of an exit of so many groups inside Syria, whereby the easing out of tensions could necessitate their travel abroad. They are not needed. They should not be there. So I would expect similar stories of that kind to happen soon.
Well, Adam Gary, when Israel is continuously cracking down on Palestinians and have killed over 140 people since March, including a nurse, journalists, and kids. What is it about the white helmets that caused the Israelis to suddenly have this sense of humanitarian responsibility?
Well, if rescuing terrorist collaborators is somehow showing a sense of humanitarianism, then I don't really want to know what extreme humanitarianism is. All that the Israelis did was facilitate an order on behalf of Big Brother in the United States to help get their men out of the Syrian Arab Republic. And they dutifully complied. And so insofar as this is the case, I agree with the gentleman on the other side of the screen. Insofar as this is almost certainly an outgrowth of the meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, where part of the deal was that America would withdraw its men, and that's all these white helmets are America, Britain, France, and Germany's men. And in exchange for that, Russia will oversee an orderly withdrawal of some of Syria's foreign allies from the region in order to normalize Syria as a whole in terms of putting the Syrian people back in charge, which is the goal of Russia and its Astana partners, Iran and Turkey. So overall, this is actually a very positive development. Good riddance to bad rubbish in terms of what the Syrian people have had to put up with. And it shows that the cooperation between the U.S. and Russia, in spite of profound disagreements in many areas, has actually led to the evacuation of people from Syrian soil who did only harm to the Syrian people. So it should be celebrated demonstrated that these fiends are gone, and the fact that Israel helped them evacuate, it could have just as easily been Jordan, but the Israeli army is probably better equipped, or it could have just as easily been the American army, but the Israelis got there first. Mm. That's the only particular significance to this for someone whose eyes are open, and for someone whose eyes aren't open, it just shows that they ought to listen less to what Israel, the United States, and others say, and observe more carefully what they do.
Okay, well, Nabil Mikhail, the significance in your perspective of the gains by the Syrian military when this group has to be immediately evacuated, like the White Helmets and what we've just seen?
Because they were sandwiched between forces hostile to them. The Israelis could not intervene to basically logistically move them away, and the Syrians could have hit them. What really impresses me is the quickness of the action. It was done quickly. So I would assume, again, and that is something, as you may recall, I spoke with you last week when you invited me to come here. Mm-hmm. There could be some quick deals struck over Syria between the Russian president and the American president.
But doesn't Most it say, Nabil, but, sorry to interrupt helmets. You, but doesn't it show that actually there are more and more gains on the ground by the Syrian military, that we have seen this taking place, and we have seen it take place very, very rapidly?
Yes, I mean, this is actually something America is recognizing now, because basically America is trying to reduce its influence in Syria as a result of the fact that the forces loyal to Assad have been regained the upper hand in critically strategic areas. But the question also, as I try to perceive it, is with the surrounding, because Jordan now is mentioned. So now, as I read from the American press, some elements from ISIL are trying to come close to the borders between Syria and Jordan. There was even a story in Al Ahram, the Cairo-based newspaper, that ISIL is trying to come to make a comeback to some parts of Syria where they were kicked out over the past couple of weeks and months. So the question is, how swift could an action be to eliminate a comeback of ISIL or a congregation or an aggregation of some extremist elements coming to the Syrian borders? Will we see some quick action taken similar to the operation that led to the departure of the White Helmets? It could be. So I believe now the stage in the conflict of Syria is that there could be some deliberate, quick consultations between Washington and Moscow that could lead to some either quick military actions to strike at some creeping hostile forces or to help ease out the situation a little bit and exit some elements, whether under a security umbrella or humanitarian designation, to leave. It is that
interesting
simple.
Point that you've made, Nabil. As you were speaking, actually, I'm just getting some breaking news right now that Israeli airstrikes are targeting Syrian military positions as we speak. Adam Gary, I guess the question is, do you think that the United States and its Western allies and regional allies that have been behind the destabilization of Syria all these years, are they ready to basically admit defeat? Are they ready to basically get out of Syria? As our other guests just pointed out, back and forth we see terrorists reappearing and appearing in different places. So the question, I guess, of the day, do you think that they are ready to stop supporting terrorism in Syria?
Well, psychologically, they'll never be ready to stop. There are still some Americans that claim they won the Vietnam War. Apparently, the images of the lost helicopters leaving Saigon didn't sink in after all these decades. But while in terms of mentality, they're certainly not ready to give up. Mm-hmm. The hand of pragmatism is certainly going to force U.S. actions in a given direction, and it is not the one that the Americans initially intended to take. Oddly, there's one thing in the Middle East that does bring Russia and the U.S. together. And frankly, it's only one thing, and that's that both countries are close partners of the Israeli regime. But what makes this crucial is that while the U.S. pursues a unilateral partnership where different people argue over which side is subservient to the other, Russia has a no enemies policy in the Middle East, which is why they have good relations with Qatar and with Saudi Arabia, with Turkey and with Syria, with Palestine and with the Israeli regime, with Egypt and with Turkey, with Iran and with Saudi Arabia. And so because of this, Russia's strategy of supreme balance and deconflagration will come into some use when it comes to developing a narrow point of agreement between Moscow and Washington. Insofar as this is true, because of the very statements that Israeli leaders have made, whereby they said they're willing to accept the de facto legitimacy of the Syrian president if the U.S. and Russia work to deconflagrate certain areas within Syria, in line with the letter and spirit of the Astana agreement anyway, then indeed Israel will eventually and asymmetrically stand down. And when Israel stands down in the Middle East, of course, the United States is all too quick to follow. So it's a difficult road ahead, asymmetrical steps ahead, but nevertheless, the deconflagration mechanisms that Russia's presence had made possible will lead to an inevitable asymmetrical stand down on the part of the U.S.
All right. Well, Nabil, now Jordan, which has already taken in many Syrian refugees, had recently said that it would not be accepting any more refugees from Syria. What makes the so-called white helmets so different that the Jordanians immediately agreed to accept them?
At least two things. First of all, a request, an official request by the U.S. and perhaps Russia, please admit these people. And second, also the transitory nature of their stay in Jordan, because as I read from the news, that they would go eventually to Canada, Britain, and perhaps another destination, most likely the U.S. So Jordan really could not decide much on that outcome. It consented to the pressure, but it suffers from hosting over a million people from Syria, and they do not have the means to sustain their existence. So it's still very tough for the Jordanians.
Now, Adam, isn't it true that a former British mercenary and military intelligence officer, James Lemessurier, formed the White Helmets? Because according to an expose in 2015 by independent journalist Vanessa Beely, it seems that he realized that humanitarian aid was more effective at maintaining war than an army. Beely also examined the former mercenary and British military intelligence soldier's role in forming the White Helmets. Your take, sir.
Well, it's all part of a strategy involving proxy war. Going back to the French colonial occupation of what was then called Indochina, or the American War on Vietnam, thousands upon thousands of French and later American troops were sent to Southeast Asia in order to subdue the national aspirations and self-determination of the Vietnamese people. Seeing that a lot of deaths, whether in Vietnam or Algeria in the case of the French, isn't very popular on the home front, these countries gradually devised the format of proxy war, whereby you give money, arms, and the associated prestige to various terror groups, various militants, various on-the-ground propagandists. They can be disguised as ambulance drivers, they can be disguised as fake doctors or anything else in between, and that one could then achieve the kind of goal that France and the U.S. wanted to achieve in Indochina and later Vietnam, but without the propaganda, the negative propaganda on the home front, where many people were seeing their own neighbors being killed. So it was part of this wider strategy of creating proxy groups to do the dirty work.
All right, stay with me, Adam. We're running out of time, but let me get Nabil. Stay with me. I want to get Nabil back in on this. Nabil, at the end of the day, the countries involved in waging war against the sovereign country of Syria, where even Western sources admitted that this was a pre-planned war to attack seven countries in 5 years, will they be held responsible? Ultimately, will they have to face a court of justice for all the death and destruction that they've caused in Syria?
I mean, Syria will take a long time to settle, but I disagree with most of the analysis here in Transpiring Inside Washington that the Helsinki summit failed. I think the Helsinki summit succeeded to score one piece of consensus over Syria. If Washington and Moscow could really strive to establish peace in Syria, and it will take long, every country responsible for damage to that country will basically retreat and regret what they have done. So the Washington-Moscow consensus should be universalized to other nations, establish a global and regional consensus over Syria, admit your mistakes, and move the peace process on.
Okay, stay with me. Let me get Adam Gary, same question, 30 seconds.
No, the parties who destroyed Syria will never be held responsible because international justice is controlled by the mighty rather than the many. The best Syria can hope for is de-escalation on the Astana model and then future investment from China, Russia, and her other partners.
Thank you both for being with us. Political commentator Adam Gary in London, Professor George Washington University, Nabil Mikhail in Washington, D.C. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out from Tehran. Thanks, Ed. See you next time.